Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, and healthcare professionals to do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. In this week's episode, we spoke with Beshoy Tadros about the lessons he learned during his childhood bout with acute lymphoblastic leukemia as an Egyptian immigrant. While learning that setbacks are never instilled to define oneself, Beshoy broke barriers, even writing a book focused on patience, perspective, and purpose.
I was born in Egypt, and when I was 3 years old, I was diagnosed with ALL, acute lymphoblastic leukemia. And as a result of that, my parents had to make the difficult decision ultimately to immigrate to the States for me to get treatment. So they basically left everything that they knew in order to find better health care than was available to them at the time, and this was 1990. We moved to California in the City of Hope, where I lived there for a year before I then relocated to Long Island, and I finished treatment at North Shore, which is now the Northwell Medical System on the island. So between the ages of 3 and 13, I had been in and out of treatment. I had come into remission when I was 8 or 9, and then I had another setback as I was approaching my 13th birthday, and I had brain surgery actually on my 13th birthday, and it was after that surgery that I received a clean bill of health.
Great. And so when you were in Egypt, I know you were fairly little, so I don't know if you remember or not, but how your disease was diagnosed, and I guess maybe how your parents knew to take you to the doctor, and how you, working with doctors to figure out your diagnosis?
Yeah. So my dad actually had a medical background. I come from a little bit of a peculiar background where my father is actually, he's a priest, he's a Coptic Orthodox priest. And prior to that, he was actually a physician himself. And so he had taken me to a few doctors once he started to recognize certain symptoms. At the time, the diagnosis was a little bit unclear. And it was after a few doctors where he had taken me home and noticed that my spleen was fairly enlarged, that he decided to rush me to see one of the more prominent pediatricians that was around. He had known him personally. And it was upon that visit that the diagnosis kind of came about.
And so we often talk to our patients about, being their own best advocates. Do you think, with your dad having that medical background, it kind of helped him advocate for you and your diagnosis?
100%. I mean, undoubtedly that was a big part of it. And it's funny because it played out again when I had brain surgery. So when I was approaching my 13th birthday, I had shown signs of, violent headaches. I was vomiting. And my dad took note of the fact that it was about 10 years after I had received my first bout of radiation. And so in his mind, given his background, he kind of took that 10-year mark to heart and realized that there might be a correlation there. And so after visiting several doctors who kind of not necessarily wrote it off, but were not as concerned with it being a big situation, it was after the third visit where he insisted the doctor perform a CAT scan send me to get a CAT scan. And it was in that CAT scan that they found that there was a golf ball-sized mass in my brain. Prior to that, they had thought I was maybe suffering from a virus or something like that. So again, it was my father's intuition, his medical background, his awareness of timeline that played a factor both in the beginning when I was initially diagnosed and all the way till my brain surgery.
Okay, wow.
Yeah.
I also saw, so you didn't share your personal journey, it looks like, until 2017. What was it around that time that made you want to kind of share your story?
Yeah, so You know, I held on to this story for a very long time because after getting the clean bill of health at 13, I had made a promise to myself around this mantra of breaking barriers, where essentially, you know, I was fed up as a child who just couldn't fit in, and that, you know, no matter what, things weren't working out. It was a lot to digest, you know, obviously, not just facing cancer, but facing cancer as an immigrant child who just wanted to play like all the other kids, who wanted to fit in and adapt and assimilate. And so I held on to that mantra, and it played out in various aspects of my life, whether it was socializing in high school, whether it was playing the sports that I wanted to play. Then I found out it actually applied in the early stages of my career when I graduated college and I was having trouble landing where I wanted to land. And ultimately, in my mid-20s, I started rediscovering my athletic ability, and I didn't really have much faith in myself because, again, my childhood was very much slowed down because of the treatment. And it was after I completed a half Ironman in 2017 that I finally realized I had been holding on to something that I needed to share. And so that same year that I decided to run the New York City Marathon, in order to run the marathon, I had to raise money for charity. So I really just picked the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society because I thought it made sense. I didn't really have a tie to them personally at that point. And I wrote my story down on a piece of paper. And I was very vulnerable because I wasn't sure if I should share it. I knew I was essentially exposing not only myself, but my family. And I thought, you know, what if nobody donates to this story? Then I'm going to look very silly, and it's really all I have to show for my entire life. And unbeknownst to me at the time, I had a mentor that looked at it, and he laughed because he saw my goal was just $3,000, and he told me that I need to make my goal higher. And that kind of lit the flame within me, and I started to notice that, you know, maybe people can take stake in this story, and maybe people can find a sign of hope or, you know, a feeling of inspiration from it. And so I decided to give it my all, and the story ended up taking on a life of its own, and I went on to raise over $50,000 for the New York City Marathon that year just by sharing the story on a piece of paper.
That's awesome. And so with that, I know you'd mentioned that your mantra was to break barriers. So let's talk about your book a little bit. So what prompted that, and you know, how did you kind of get into writing it?
Sure. So, you know, it was a culmination of several things. So let's say most of my lifetime I held on to this story, and then like we just shared in 2017, I finally put it on a piece of paper. And in a very similarly natural way, the last 2 years, from 2017 to 2019, that piece of paper took a life of its own. And after the New York City Marathon, I was starting to get asked by different companies to come speak to their people and talk about translating the success of fundraising to succeeding in a sales organization. I was asked to talk about the lessons learned battling cancer as a child and how that helped me navigate my career. And I opened the door for what ended up being a very organic, natural growth of the story. And it was right around December 2019, so a little over a year ago, I had made the decision that I was going to look for a new career. I was in the same company for about 7 years, and I was looking for a little bit of a change. And at that same time, I Googled two things. I Googled, A, how to write a book, because I had no idea how to write a book, and B, I Googled how many words you need to write to hit 100 pages. And so it was 20,000 words. And so I picked out 8 inspirational quotes because 8 is my favorite number. And I set a word limit for myself, or really more so I held myself accountable for at least writing. And not necessarily a word limit, but I had to write every single day underneath each of those quotes. And eventually, I hit the 100-page mark, and I was looking at it, and it was just a long Word document. And I never wrote a book before. I had no literary background. I had no business writing a book, if you ask me personally. I didn't know what to do with it. And so I reached out to a friend who was pretty well-connected, And I said, hey, like, do you know anyone that's published before? And he did. And so he connected me with that author who looked at my Word document, and he said, you know, I think you might have something. Do you mind if I give you my editor? And so before I knew it, within about 7-8 months, I went from Googling how to write a book to a finished piece. And I think it's just an extension of how things have grown organically since the very first time I wrote it down on that piece of paper in 2017.
And so, you know, some of your key tenors are patience, perspective, and purpose. How does this fit into the book and you're not, like, telling your story and your journey?
Yeah, so when I talk about patience, perspective, and purpose, I talk about those as three tenors that existed throughout the way as a story escalates from a child diagnosed with cancer in Egypt all the way to the adult who crossed the finish line and raised all that money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. And the way that it applies is I tell people that patience plus perspective plus purpose is the formula for overcoming obstacles or breaking barriers, if you will. And I relate it to childhood. And as a child battling cancer, you don't always get the results you want when you want them. And so that's where I learned the tenor of patience. And alongside of that, I had to mentally accept that things happened for a reason, why I was dealt the cards that I was dealt at that age, because, again, as a child, you digest things a little bit differently than you do as an adult, and I had to convince myself that there was a reason why I got this hand, and there was a reason why this was happening to me and not to my peers at the time, and that's where the perspective aspect of it. The purpose aspect of it came a little bit later in life, where I had to realize that in order to really grow from the experiences that I had as a child, I had to put myself in uncomfortable situations. And I talk specifically about that half Ironman that I competed in before I shared my story, and how I had this mile 40 moment where I was pretty much at my wit's end physically, and I was at a point of nearly giving up, and I looked down, there was salt all over my skin, I was completely dehydrated. I joked about being nearly 30 years old and about to call my mother and then call it a day and walk away from the race. And it was at that moment where I had dug deeper than I previously ever had in order to summon strength to get to the finish line. And so it was in that experience that I realized that I can't hold on to this story anymore. I need to share it with people. And that was essentially how I birthed a personal purpose. So, again, patience plus perspective plus purpose, that's the formula that I put together for breaking barriers.
And so, with breaking barriers, what are you hoping that cancer patients and even their loved ones can take away from the book and your message?
The number one thing that I want people to take away from the book is that barriers are not put in front of you to define you, but more so to dare you. So as a former cancer patient and as a survivor myself, I don't want people looking at me as Beshoy the cancer survivor, or Beshoy the former cancer patient, or Beshoy the person who had leukemia. I want people to look at me and say, that's a person who was dealt a pretty bad hand and who used it to empower others to make good of what they have, or who took that hand and used it to shine a light on what could be if you brought in your mindset, if you employ those tenors that I had discussed. And so, again, to think of barriers as not defining oneself, but more so daring you to do something beyond maybe what you expect of yourself.
Absolutely. And so one way I'd like to kind of wrap things up, what would you say is your biggest piece of advice for another individual, and maybe even, a child or a young adult who's facing a cancer diagnosis?
My biggest piece of advice, and I know it's extremely difficult, is to really hone in on your mindset around the diagnosis and to realize that as horrible or as dark as it may seem, cancer for me now is more so something that gave me an advantage relative to everybody else. Because I had cancer, I see life and I see my ability to overcome obstacles as being greater than the average individual who perhaps hadn't dealt with cancer. So I look at cancer as more so a weapon of sorts, something that I've used to a positive. And by kind of honing in on that mindset, you know, it can maybe distract you from the pain or the distress of treatment.
Okay, great. Is there anything that we haven't touched upon that you think our audience should know more about?
So I guess the only other thing that I think is definitely worth touching on is the importance of surrounding yourself with a community that empowers you, especially if you are currently battling cancer yourself. I was very fortunate at the time, and I know as a child, maybe you don't get to always choose who's around you, and I was blessed with parents that that really cultivated an environment to keep pushing forward in the times of treatment and in the times where I really needed someone to lean on. But as an adult, if you know I were to be dealt a hand like that, it's just there's so much to be said around surrounding yourself with the people who will continue to inspire you to move forward.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.